Good morning, CHD. It is Wednesday, June 5th, and I'm here again with what I hope will be the final WHO program on CHD TV. WHO had its annual meeting where it was to discuss the international health regulations and the new pandemic treaty, and that's all just happened. So let's get right into it. James, want to start?
Yes. All right. Let's get into it. And I know we probably don't have to update our regular audience on this, but anyway, let's just set the table. World Health Assembly, the 77th World Health Assembly, just took place in Geneva. And yes, this is the governing body of the World Health Organization that meets once a year, usually, sometimes twice a year, as they might this year, in order to essentially discuss and pass and gavel down resolutions and adopting whatever. And in this particular case, as we have been talking about month after month after month after month for who knows how long now, a long time, yes, this particular World Health Assembly was important because it's the 75th anniversary of the WHO, and for years now they've been talking about the prospect of gaveling down on some sort of pandemic treaty, whatever it was going to be called. Well, yes. So we have some updates on this. One is that the pandemic agreement, or whatever they're calling it this week, well, it wasn't adopted in the 77th World Health Assembly. But, they're just going to continue the process. And in fact, they're meeting again next month. And the hope, their hope, is that they will actually be able to convene a special World Health Assembly later this year to adopt whatever agreement they do end up cooking up, or at the very least come back next year and do it at the next year World Health Assembly. The other major update is, of course, the international health regulations, which again, we've been talking about month after month after month, so people know about it by now. But anyway, the general agreement that is already functioning, it already applies to every single WHO member state, which is basically the entire world. It's been in effect since 2005. It's been amended a couple of times since then, and they have just adopted a bunch of other amendments. And we can talk about what those amendments mean or don't mean, and whether this is the celebration, the biggest victory in the history of activism or not. And Meryl, I will let you take your takeaway from this. What do you think?
Yeah, so I watched this process very closely for the last couple of years, and particularly in the last week. These two documents were supposed to have been finalized months ago. The international health regulation amendments were supposed to be finalized by the end of January. And that's according to the rules of the IHR, which were made about 20 years ago when the committees were negotiating until the wee hours of the morning, and they said, please, let's not ever do this again. So they made a rule that you needed to finalize the document and give it to everybody 4 months ahead. That did not happen. They kept trying to finalize it, kept having more and more and more and more meetings, kept having a deadline. Then there was an April deadline. Then they moved the April deadline to the beginning of May. Then they moved to the middle of May and to the end of May. Finally, they kept negotiating all through the week of the World Health Assembly meetings, which is means diplomats from 194 countries, plus two other countries, the Holy See, Vatican City, and Liechtenstein, who are not members of the WHO, but are members of the international health regulations. So 196 nation states were represented. They came out with some draft documents during the week, and then they came out with some other possible documents, from one from the Africa group, one from the United States, and four other nations. And finally, on the final day of the meeting, June 1, because really this was to be the centerpiece of the meeting, was to be agreement on at least one of these documents, they came out with a final document that they thought they could get agreement for. Now, the WHO never likes to vote. They like to go through consensus process where they don't count any votes. They're supposed to have a quorum. They don't like to count to make sure they have a quorum. They just like to do it when they think they can make something happen. So they finally got a document, and it was supposed to be the morning of June 1st, but it wasn't. It was supposed to be the afternoon, you know, then late in the day. People saw a document, and it was decided to go through this so-called consensus process, which they did about 10 p.m. on Saturday night in Geneva. And so the nations were told what the number of the document was and asked, does anyone have any objections? No one raised their hand or jumped on the desk. And in 3 seconds, the gavel went down and said it's passed. They did a similar thing with the pandemic agreement, saying everyone had agreed that we'll just keep negotiating up to another year. And so again, the gavel came down, no objections, it passed. Then they gave the nations time to talk about their so-called vote. You know, what do you have anything you want to say? And a lot of nations surprisingly did have things they wanted to say. Slovakia said, we don't agree with either of these two documents and we're not going to be a party to it. Iran said something about how it didn't like it. Even Japan had some issues. The UK said, well, you know, we don't know if we're going to go along with this or not. We're about to have elections July 4th, and we'll let the new government decide what they're going to do with it. And Argentina said something. There was a lot of negativity in the room, which was surprising, but perhaps a reflection of the fact that this document had been forced through. So anyway, I read the document. James read it. I'll let him start to talk about what the document actually says that did get adopted.
Yes. All right. Yeah, let's get into some specifics, because I think ultimately I agree that this is a win, but I'm not necessarily celebrating victory lap. We're done with this. I think
we're not done.
An ongoing battle. Done. But okay, let's get into some specifics. For example, I noticed in your recent Substack, you have one up, the comparison, IHR amendments as proposed in February 2023 and adopted on June 1st, 2024. You write, the specific reference to gene therapy was in Article 1, but is gone from the adopted draft. Gone, capital G, capital O, capital N, capital E. Am I going crazy? Because it is there in Article
1. Right. It's mentioned. What is gone is the ability to force us to take medicines. So even I made a mistake there. So they do mention gene therapy specifically.
It is not gone. Capital N, capital O, capital T, it is there.
Yeah. I think I may have fixed that, but maybe I didn't yet. But what happened is that the way they had written this document initially, the way it's been until we finally saw another draft only in the middle of April. So the draft that we've been working with for a year and a half, well, 15 months, said that the director general would have the right to issue all sorts of orders when he declared a public health emergency of international concern. And one of those orders could have been in genetic vaccines, you know, gene therapies. What the new document says is he's allowed to declare pandemics or public health emergencies of international concern. It's just it doesn't give him any powers to do anything with that declaration. And that is, in my mind, very massive.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of language in here and in some of the other documents, because there were a lot of different resolutions and things that were adopted, not just the IHR amendments, but a lot of them are in that language. For example, the climate change resolution was about the WHO calls on member states to do, which, again, is the kind of, well, it's in your court now, and it makes it into a, look, the WHO doesn't control, we're not invading anyone's sovereignty, we're not taking over anything, we're just making recommendations, and it's all non-binding, etc. So yes, this, I suppose, could have had teeth, and it does not. There is, as you say, it's not that they removed non-binding and things like that from this document, that's still there. So that is absolutely a good thing, absolutely. But it depends on the goodwill of the member states and whether or not they're going to have the spine to actually stand up to the WHO. That, to me, is where I think the win actually is. But also, another important part of this document that I think is concerning, to say the least, Article 44 BIS, Coordinating Financial Mechanism, which establishes a coordinating financial mechanism to promote the provision of timely, predictable, and sustainable financing for the implementation of these regulations in order to develop, strengthen, and maintain core capacities, as set out in Annex 1, blah, blah, blah. Seek to maximize the availability of financing for the implementation needs and work to mobilize new and additional financial resources. I think they got their big pharma win here, the however many billions of dollars that this ultimately equates to, win-win for the real owners of the WHO, the donors.
I don't understand the details, but the Africa group did, so the ruling class countries wanted another financial mechanism in addition to the pandemic fund. And I think that was because the pandemic fund is supposed to be donated money that will be given to poor countries to for certain programs. You know, that is like a granting organization. What the wealthy countries have wanted is a mechanism by which they can loan money to force pandemic preparedness down the throats of the rest of the world. And so I think that's what they mean by this financial mechanism. And so they did get a new financial mechanism that will involve loans. Now, and apparently this has been done to the third world countries before. They were promised a lot of money for climate change amelioration. And I was told just the other day by a diplomat that when they got to the meeting, Larry Summers said, oh, that money was loans. It's not grants. And the poor country said, well, we wouldn't have gone along with this if we had known. And Summers said, well, the United States wouldn't have gone along with it if it had been grants. And that was for $100 billion. So I think that's sort of what we're getting into here. The United States said, and is it the GHSS, the Global Health Security Strategy, that it issued, it said it was going, that its plan was to give $1 and have the nations provide $2. For every $1, they had to come up with $2, which they would have to borrow. And I'm guessing that they're supposed to borrow it from this new financial mechanism.
Something so along those lines, but that's an awful lot of...
No one's making them borrow.
Yeah, I mean, there's an awful lot of kind of guesswork and what does this actually mean? Which, again, to my mind means maybe we shouldn't be celebrating yet because we don't even know what it means yet.
Yeah, well, that's true. But the things where we can't figure out what it means aren't being forced on nations. So that's the important point. Is before there were so many shalls, you know, you must do this, you must do that, you must do this. And here the language has become so much more fluffy so that you're right. And people can interpret it multiple ways, but it also means you can wiggle out of it if you want to.
One thing that I definitely saw in here that was definitely, I think, a good thing, a definite win, is that there is absolutely no enforcement or requirement specifically of any digital health certificate, vaccine, passport.
Yeah,
yes, they make provision for digital or non-digital health certificates and blah, blah, blah. But there is no specific, everyone will have to have this particular vaccine passport in here. So that to me is good, although I'm sure they're going to continue discussing that in the pandemic agreement.
Yeah, I think that's huge also. I really think that was the gateway to the digital gulag. Yeah. Another thing was that the core requirements are relatively minimal compared to what they were going to be. They were going, you know, with specific requirements to surveil and censor and have laboratories and blah blah blah. And it's much, again, fluffier. It's not very clear. It looks like the developing nations will not have to put up a lot of anything in order to meet the core requirements, except for addressing misinformation and disinformation, of course, but it doesn't say how they must address it.
That's a good point to bring up because yes, I can't remember specific language from one of the old drafts, but there was much more elaborate in terms of address how they were going to surveil and address and catalog and whatever counter misinformation. But now it's just left as counter disinformation or whatever, which could mean anything essentially, including just the WHO or the CDC or whatever. We'll just make statements. No, that's disinformation, which you know is what we would expect them to do anyway.
Exactly. There's no pathogen sharing in this document.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, WHO already started its biohub three years ago.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So it's got it. I don't know whether it ever got permission.
Yeah.
But
for example, what was it called? The vaccine, the mRNA vaccine technology hub or whatever that they started in South Africa and has now moved to Rwanda and other places. They've already set up a lot of the infrastructure that they were going for here. It's just not in this document.
Yes, exactly. But I mean, my battle was to keep it out of these documents, realizing that this is something that's being implemented at the level of the nation states, of course. Yeah. But the European Union is, and the United States are going, you know, whole hog ahead with this. But had the WHO been able to obtain these powers, it would have had the ability to order this on 196 states, nations. And if a country like the United States wanted to help them enforce it, you know, that could have happened. Another thing that's not sure if it was in these documents, but the way I read them was that if a nation didn't report within a certain specified period of time, and it didn't have to get the permission of the nation state. If the WHO decided there was a potential pandemic in your country, didn't need to get your permission, it could then do something about that. And that seems to be gone too.
Yeah. To my mind, I think that the meat and potatoes of this is the finance mechanism and whatever results of that. And I think that essentially this is more about the money grab and the building out the pharmaceutical industry complex. I think all of those sort of specific, the WHO has the power to, the director general can do this. I think they are kicking that can down the road in the pandemic agreement. And I think they're going to continue haggling and working on that, which to me is both the threat and the victory. Because the way I conceptualize the victory here is what you're gesturing to with the comments that the individual countries were making and the sort of negativity surrounding this, or at the very least the posturing of, well, you know, we may or may not good to go forward with this. I think the reason we are seeing that is precisely because the efforts of yourself and the others who have been raising warnings and ringing the alarm about this and raising awareness of this in the general public has completely shifted the political conversation that can take place around this. I think 100% their ideal would have been for all of this to have taken place just in the smoky back room, no one paying attention to it, completely, you know, tree falling in the forest, no, it doesn't make a sound. It would just have been a fait accompli, and oh, by the way, there's a new pandemic agreement. I think that is what they wanted. That is not what they got. Instead, they've got huge, in case of Tokyo, tens of thousands of people marching and getting the health minister to come out and apologize to them. And all of this, I mean, things that would have been unthinkable a few years ago are taking place. And that is why, at the very least, these diplomats sitting there at the WHO in Geneva, the WHA in Geneva, have to sit there and at least mouth the platitude of, well, you know, we make reservations, we may or may not go ahead with this, in order to placate that the people who are now aware of this. And that, to me, is the momentum that we have to keep on as the pandemic agreement it continues to be worked on. Because again, they would love for all of us to have our victory lap and go home. And by the way, they're going to pass whatever they're going to pass later this year.
we're going to go after the deep state now. I think we're not going home.
Yeah,
but
Well, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was trying to figure out. It was hard to find on search engines. How many people were there in Japan on Friday? The crowd looked unbelievably huge. I thought it might be 50,000. And was it the current health minister or former health minister who apologized?
I'm going to have to look up those details before I pronounce on them. I was under the impression it was the current health minister, but I could be wrong about that. So I'm going to have to look that up before I pronounce on that. But people can follow it. I can't even cite the website, but there is a website in English that had information about it in English that I will direct people to. I will put it in the show notes for people who are interested in that.
I mean, was it the biggest march ever in Tokyo?
I couldn't pronounce on that. I know they used to have pretty big political marches and things back in the 50s and 60s here. So maybe not ever, but at any rate, in my experience here, I've never seen anything like this. So,
and that's, I've been 20 here 20 years?
Years now.
Wow.
It's a big deal. It really is. Obviously, it's not mainstream news here. They're trying to essentially ignore it. But there is definitely a tide turning, specifically here in Japan. And I think that has to do with a number of factors, one of which is the new self-replicating vaccine, whatever technology they're working on here that people are starting to become aware of. And because Japanese doctors have been speaking up about the COVID vaccines and other things and raising alarms about those, I think it has raised general awareness about the issues of potentially going forward with this vaccine technology, as we were talking about in our last conversation.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I was just interviewed by a reporter in New Zealand about an hour ago. And even though Ashley Bloomfield is a New Zealander who was the co-chair of the IHR negotiating team, and Helen Clark is involved with it. She's a former prime minister of New Zealand, is involved with the WHO. And of course, Jacinda Ardern was a big proponent, New Zealand. So New Zealand had a huge presence for the fact that it's a 5 million person country. And he told me there has been no news whatsoever about the WHO in New Zealand over the last couple of days. So that in itself tells you there was a win, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to correct myself live on air. Japan's former Minister for Internal Affairs and Communications apologizes to the crowd in Tokyo. So there you go.
But not still, a minister. Yeah. I mean, a prominent person.
And they've been saying,
right. Yeah. And they've been saying very prominent doctors were part of this. So I don't know. I think it really what's happened in Japan is huge. The fact that you can be vaccinated without knowing it, you know, with no informed consent, no nothing, that should scare everybody.
And anyone who is not concerned about that does not have their head screwed on straight. And that is exactly why I think they want to work under the cover of secrecy with all of this. And they want it all to be passed and done and gaveled down before the public even knows what's going on, which is why conversations like this one are so important. As I say, I don't think they wanted any attention whatsoever on this. They certainly didn't want the people scrutinizing what was going on. And as I say, that's why all of these politicians are, as we've pointed out, this is the year of selections all around the world. And a lot of governments are going to be changing hands, and all in that miraculous window of, is it 10 months? Or 18 months or whatever, however many months.
Less than 12 months. Right. I think 100 countries are having elections before the end of the year.
Yeah. So there, I mean, again, this could be a political issue, and I'm not one for political solutions to these things, but as I've said many, many, many times, politicians love to get out in front of crowds and pretend like they're leading them. And if the crowd is saying, exit the WHO, politicians know which way, who's buttering their bread, and may indeed start leading that parade. And I think that's the real win here. As I say, my concept of this win is, at the very least, the moving of the Overton window. Because 5 years ago, if you had talked about the WHO as a threat to health sovereignty and we need to exit the World Health Organization altogether, that would have been absolute, total, fringe, wingnut lunacy. What are you talking about? Go watch the Corbett Report. I don't know, you're crazy. But now it is a genuine thing that is on the table. More people have heard about that concept. More people are on board with it than ever before. That is huge. And that's why, was part of the reason why they're having such problems passing these documents. Other part of it, I think, is that quibbling between the developed world and the developing world, and the developing world essentially wants more financial assurances. Ooh, again, however the wedge gets driven, I'm just happy that it is driven. But fundamentally, I think more people are aware of this issue than ever before in the history of the WHO. And that's to the good. The more people are aware of it, exactly like self-replicating vaccines or any of these other crazy ideas that are coming about, the more people know about it, the more they will be inclined to resist it. And I think, again, that's the ultimate win here.
Right. They're also relating it to the UN. And the UN is coming out with its whole new, you know, UN 2.0, whatever. Mm-hmm. I forget what they're calling. That's one name, but they have another name, and they're supposed to look, you know, roll that out in September, at the end of September.
Yeah. Strengthening the future or whatever. Yeah. Summit of the future.
Yeah. And something else too. But anyway, they're hoping to, you know, new financial architecture for the world, new governance. And so people have woken up from this to that, and we'll get more attention to that.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I just saw on Door to Freedom about Oklahoma. Tell us about
yes.
that.
Yes. So Louisiana was the first state to have passed a law. So that goes in perpetuity now. No jurisdiction to the WHO, the UN, and the World Economic Forum. And that was a beautiful bill signed into law about 10 days ago. Oklahoma passed an almost identical bill. It got blocked in the Senate, and then citizens made an unbelievably huge effort to unblock it, and it did, you know, embarrass those senators who are supporting the World Economic Forum, et cetera. And it got unblocked. It was voted in favor by the Senate. It went back to the House. That was on Wednesday. On Thursday, it went back to the House. And it hasn't been signed by the governor yet, but the governor is one of the governors who support it. And so it will be. We will have two states that have laws now against obeying any orders of the WHO. And by the way, that bill was introduced as an emergency measure because of these WHO documents, because had the pandemic treaty/agreement gone through, it could have come into force as early as a month from now. And so the Oklahomans said, you know what, we're going to, you know, preclude that. And so they did. Now, what we've talked about before is that there were 49 senators who were against this, 22 attorney generals, and then about 10 days ago, 24 came out against it as well. So if the rest of the world wasn't scratching their heads, what is this document? And, you know, should we just go ahead and sign it and forget about it? When they heard that practically half of the U.S. governing officials are saying no, they had to start thinking, what is this? What's going on? And is the United States trying to drag us into something that they're going to escape from at the last minute?
Yeah. So my hot take on those state bills is that I won't say that they're not worth the paper that they're written on. They're worth exactly precisely the paper they're written on. By which I mean, when you think about it, what they are saying is I can't remember the exact language, but they're not beholden to any dictates from the UN or World Health Organization or World Economic Forum, or they're not mandates or dictates or whatever language they use, right? Which essentially means, well, they could, if the World Health Organization makes some sort of recommendation, they could decide to adopt it, right? And so, same thing, maybe. It all depends on who happens to be in charge of the state legislature at that time and what they end up deciding and by whatever mechanism. So it may amount to the same thing in the end, but it depends precisely on the fact that, as you say, the public was leading the Senate by the nose on this one, at least in Oklahoma, right? And that speaks again to the power of general public opinion, which is the real deciding factor here. And if the general public opinion is that, hell no, in the event of the next declared emergency, we're not going to be listening to the World Health Organization, we're not going to be locking down, we're not going to be masking up, et cetera, then I think the politicians would have a lot harder time enforcing that this time. And I think that's where the ultimate win of this comes. This speaks to that fundamental issue that it keeps going back to for me, which is that essentially this entire process, everything, the World Health Organization, all of its presumed edicts on anything, is only as good as the compliance of the member states. And that's what this sort of legislation points to. If member states decide not to implement, to not go along, what is the enforcement mechanism on this? What is the WHO going to do? Are they going to roll with tanks and bombs into Oklahoma and start bombing? No, of course not. There's nothing they can really do about it. Whatever, they can declare the United States a rogue nation and sanction them at the UN or what have you. But I don't think that's going to get very far. And again, this is it just speaks to the fact that this comes back down to the people and what they do or don't want. And to me, so this is when I will take my victory lap and celebrate. We've won. This is great. Is when finally the penny finally drops with the average Joe Blow, Joe Sixpack, and Jane Soccer Mom on the street, and they realize that no, obviously the WHO and the UN and whoever else doesn't get to dictate and mandate things that are happening in our state, but also the U.S. government doesn't get to do that. And also the state government doesn't get to do that. And also the municipal government doesn't get. No, health, bodily sovereignty, my autonomy as a free individual human being is my God-given right. And no legislature anywhere has the right to broach my bodily autonomy. And once people start to really feel that and act that in their bones and realize, no, hell no, I'm not going to mask up just because they tell me to. I'm not going to take whatever jab they tell me to take. Once people really start acting that out and realize that bodily autonomy comes down to the individual and is not subject to any outside authority, that's my win.
So I think bodily autonomy is a relatively small win. I think this is a lot bigger than that. I think bodily autonomy is huge and it's absolutely necessary, and nobody should be allowed to tell you what to do with your body. And actually there are some legal documents that say that. But you know, we can't completely be libertarians because we do seem to need police and maybe armies, maybe schools, traffic lights, things like that. And so the bulwark between us and totalitarianism is our elected officials. We might not like them. The process is no good. I'm all in favor of paper ballots and all sorts of other things that would try to make it a more fair and not corruptible process, if possible. But that's what we've got, is elected officials. We do get to vote. Sometimes it actually matters. Sometimes it's all crooked. And in this case, the governors and the attorney generals of Oklahoma and Louisiana have said that they are the ultimate officials in their state and that they will not carry out any direct or indirect orders issued from these supranational organizations. And so they put their signature on it, and their legislature passed a bill. And really, you know, unless all of those elected officials go against the people, which is certainly possible, the people are protected in those two states from these organizations. To say that this is only worth the paper it's printed on is to say that about all the other laws too. And
as a committed 100% diehard anarchist, 100% hard to disagree with everything you just said, I totally and completely reject fundamentally the idea that this is an elected democracy and we're going to vote our way out of it. No, absolutely. 100% no. That is the fundamental line in the sand that I draw. And my bodily autonomy is not subject to any state official whatsoever.
No, I didn't say that. I said bodily autonomy is the least thing we should be going for. I mean, that's a given. No, that's that nobody has a right to.
That is 100% the absolute basis.
No, everybody has to have bodily. Nobody, there should be no mandates on your physical body of any kind. Of course.
What if the state legislature says there is? Well, then, I guess there was a law passed.
Yeah, right. Don't believe me.
No, I'm working not. 100% hard disagree.
That is exactly where I'm going. So we'll get to talk about that, but I'm going to work on it in the same way I worked on this, which is every lever I can push will be pushed.
Well, I'm all on board with that. Every single button people can push, including voting and political buttons, whatever, push them all. Absolutely. But for me, it's all about the mindset, and the mindset of a people that are oppressed and enslaved in their mind and beholden to some legislature out there that's passing magical laws with their pieces of paper that somehow abrogate their fundamental rights. No, 100% hard disagree. And I will stand up for that principle every single time.
Yes. I agree. I think we have to get, and so I was shocked and amazed and thrilled to hear that the chair of the subcommittee that had Fauci testify before it today, what's his name, Brad Wenstrup, he's a doctor of podiatric medicine, actually said there should be no mandates. Actually said it right at the very end of the hearing, like his second or third to last sentence. And I thought, I've heard a politician say that. Now we go after, you know, we put his feet to the fire and let's pass a law like that says that. Yeah,
sure. Let's get them to at least put it in writing what they're going to stand up for. Right. And then watch them try to break it later. Yeah.
Yeah. So, oh, that's good. What else?
How about some of the other documents? I was not following all of the things. I did read the climate change resolution that they adopted, which I thought was funny, interesting, that now they're trying to, what their push is for carbon neutral healthcare, and they're talking about the fact that healthcare itself creates 5% of global emissions. So, like, what on earth? What nonsense are they pushing here?
Yeah, they're trying to find everything they can to link health and global warming. And so this is something they pulled out. I can't remember. I made a slide last year that had that quote in it. So they came up with a number. Healthcare contributes to 5% of global warming. And I felt like saying, yeah, it contributes to 20% of GDP in the United States. Why is that surprising? And so they want to make healthcare, more carbon neutral. And you know what that means? It means you don't go to the doctor anymore. You sit in your little cubicle and you do everything online.
Yeah, they're trying to make people feel guilty. Like, oh, you know, the fact that you went to the hospital for your broken leg, but 100 years from now, it'll be 0.1 degrees warmer, or whatever nonsense they're trying to pull here. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, a drone will drop a cast that you can put on yourself and you'll be good to go.
Yeah. It's so nonsensical, but I think you're right. I think the ultimate part of this is just connecting those ideas of climate change and health in the public imagination, because as we know, that's a linchpin of the One Health agenda that they're not giving up on. They're going to continue to push, even if they didn't get it in the IHR amendments.
Yeah. So let's say that again. So for the globalists to succeed in taking over all the resources of the world and controlling us, they need climate change. They need censorship and propaganda and surveillance, right? Mm-hmm. And they were hoping like heck to have healthcare, to have pandemics, to be able to roll out rapid vaccines, give them to us, and then who knows what's in them. We still don't even know everything that's in the COVID vaccines.
Yeah.
But that was the plan. I don't think they're going to be able to roll out rapid vaccines. They may be able to roll out pandemics at will. We have to work on that.
As you pointed out, the vaccine passport was going to be the linchpin of the whole digital ID gulag. So, it's good that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. And then when they were losing the digital, they were still trying to add all this verbiage to say, we have to be able to authenticate this. They didn't want people to get away with getting, having a doctor write you a document when you hadn't been vaccinated, because that was what it was really about. Not authenticating health passports, but making sure everybody has to be vaccinated. They couldn't get that. All they got was a doctor's signature. So you're still going to be able to get a forged or whatever, health certificate if necessary. And I'd like to remind people that health certificates have always been necessary. I mean, I've traveled through Africa and India and had to have all kinds of shots and carried around a little yellow booklet for decades with all my shots in them. So this is nothing new. It's just they're just using that mechanism to try to get us into the digital gulag. And they didn't make it this time. And believe me, if you live in Africa or if you live in most of Europe, you know how to get a fake health certificate because I saw lots of them. So really, they lost the things that they wanted most. They wanted the rollout of vaccines without licensure, without testing, without liability. That's gone. They don't really have any mechanism for compliance. They do have an implementation committee, but we don't really know what that means. they didn't get the digital, you know, ID, and that there's no money, there's no financial. I mean, yes, they've got this financial mechanism, but there's nothing that says how much nations will have to pay or how much they'll get, or there's no cost right now to being for the poor nations in particular to be a part of this, which is what they were afraid of, you know, that it was going to cost them. Especially if there had been these core capacities that they were required to maintain, which could have been quite extensive, surveillance and censorship having been part of that. So they got off of that. So I think the nations knew what they were doing. They negotiated it down to basically a minimum vanilla document that can be interpreted in many ways. And the African nations, they didn't want the pandemic treaty. They said, we want it done in 6 months. It's either finished or not finished, but 6 months is all. And I think the U.S. wanted even to go up to 2 years or maybe more with the negotiations. And they managed to come up with an agreement for a year. They'll do one more year. But now that everybody knows what it's about, I really don't think they're going to be able to get very far with it. Unless the bribes and the threats are huge. And if that happens, again, then the people have to say, no, we're not going along with mandated experimental vaccines or anything else. That's it. You know, just because these diplomats signed a piece of paper, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Right. All right. How about any of the other documents or sessions that took place? Were you following any of that antimicrobial resistance?
Everything I looked at seemed like it had been watered down, and so I didn't pay it much attention. But I don't think they got anything substantive that they wanted.
Yeah. Well, let's put that out as a crowdsourcing assignment. Yeah. Everyone take one document and go through it and see what nonsense might have been embedded in there while no one was looking. But yeah, I haven't seen anything yet that jumps out at me.
Yeah. All right. So,
all right, let's step back. Let's look big picture then. And where do we go from here?
So we've got to watch what happens with the pandemic agreement and use this opportunity to educate more people about biological warfare and pandemics and vaccines. And I think a lot of people are educated about vaccines already. And so we have to connect dots. There hasn't been enough dot connecting. People do not understand, and even I don't understand, really, this whole Great Reset, this whole New World Order, you know, one world government. What? Why? You know? What, you know, if you're really going to get rid of a whole bunch of people, then there's less money going through the economy. Does that matter? What's the goal of the, you know, pathologically crazy people who are doing this? What do they really want? I can't, you know, it's just not clear.
Well, I think you hit on it there with pathological. I think if we start understanding it as a pathocracy, that's one way of starting to get a handle on what this is. And it's the, unfortunately, it isn't the cream that rises to the top. It is the psychopaths that are willing to literally sacrifice their own mother if they need to in order to advance their political career or whatever else. So yeah, there's a lot of people in positions of power that should not be in positions of power. In some ways, I think that question that you're gesturing towards, the Great Reset, New World Order, whatever agenda, whatever they're calling it this week, is essentially what I've been trying to get a handle on for 17 years now in various aspects. And the health aspect is one of those aspects that I'm not blowing my own horn, but I was talking about it in 2009, the pandemic, look at these agreements they're signing and the quarantines and medical martial law. I know that is one extremely juicy vector for the people who desire power to use as a threat that will get the public on board with their agenda. And it's only, unfortunately, it's only one potential threat. And as we see, they can pull out any card from that deck at any time. Oh, nuclear warfare. Oh, terrorism. Oh, the pandemic, whatever. And I think you're right. I think we have to do more dot connecting to understand that this is not just a bunch of random stuff that just keeps happening willy-nilly. And even if it is, the point is that they will use it as a way of furthering their agenda. Whatever crisis comes along is an opportunity for someone to try to take more power and control. And I think that's once we start to understand that and see it, it starts to actually make sense of all these crazy, random, disconnected things that just keep happening willy-nilly. No, there's a specific agenda that is being worked towards here. And once we understand and identify that, exactly like bringing attention to the WHO and the WHA, and suddenly people know what the WHO is and what it's up to, and suddenly they at the very least have to back off a little, and don't worry, don't look at us anymore, we're just going to work in the back over here, don't pay any attention to us. No, our attention is incredibly important, and they don't want our attention on them.
Right,
so
exactly.
That's the way forward for me, is to continue bringing the attention to not just the World Health Organization, but that too.
I think that's right. So my board is still, we're still in discussions about which way do we go now? We've only had 2 days to think about it. Mm-hmm. We've had 2 meetings and we'll have another one next week and decide. But I think there's a lot of meat there. There's a lot of things to really grapple with and a lot of room to educate the public. And because, you know, we don't have the mass media, it's challenging, and yet more and more people are coming to the alternative media and looking for some truth. And then finally, how do you shift the culture so this never happens again?
Yeah. I hope that's a rhetorical question, because if I knew the answer to that, I would have implemented it a long time ago. But in a way, again, I think that's what part of what I'm attempting to do is just to raise awareness, because I know the awareness itself is the fundamental basic building block of whatever solution comes up. As long as people are aware that this is happening, I think that it's not going to be me or you or any other individual that's going to solve all of this. It's going to be people being aware of it, paying attention to it, and acting towards it. And to the extent that people just go back to munching their popcorn and watching their sports ball and not paying attention is the exact extent to which people will be enslaved by whatever trick is pulled out of the bag next, whether that's another phony pandemic or whatever else.
Exactly right. Exactly right. They have a lot of tricks. They have a lot of tricks, and we have a lot of people.
Yeah, that's it. And more all the time. And again, I can speak to that, having been here in Japan and watching the incredible crowds and movement that's building here. There's stuff happening, and people poo-poo and dismiss that to their own detriment, because this is where it's at. And I know it doesn't look like it doesn't seem and look like the final victory that we're programmed to expect from our Hollywood programming, that there's going to be some big epic battle and we're going to cut off the head of the snake and it's dead. And yay, you know, yeah. Way we win. Right. No, that's not how reality works. It means vigilance. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, right?
Well, exactly. And the WHO isn't the head of the snake, and the UN isn't either. You know, these are globalists who are using these entities because they're there, you know, because they were able with a bit of money to control them. And they're going to use another entity. I mean, they blew up the, you know, Nord Stream. They do have access to nuclear weapons. I mean, they can start a war with Russia. A lot of things could happen, but you know, by defanging them one fang at a time.
We'll do what we can in the meantime to forestall them. But in the end, it's going to be about that revolution in consciousness, which is the only revolution that matters. And I think the idea, just planting the kernel of the seed of the idea of exit the WHO in the general public consciousness is the greatest win we could have at this particular point, because that idea starts to germinate. And hey, why stop at the WHO? We can exit the UN. We can exit the World Trade Organization. Hey, all of these different structures of control. Why are we participating in them? Whoa, who died and made them kings? Once people start to get that idea and it starts to germinate, I think freedom can flower. And that's ultimately what I'm attempting to do, watering that seed.
Yes. And I'm glad you mentioned the World Trade Organization, because I did want to throw in a moment about these, what are they called? They're new forms of control, or they're not governance. These are unelected bodies. Like the World Trade Organization, you know, has some appointed person from our country and appointed people from other countries. And they're making these huge decisions worth trillions of dollars and laws going into effect that none of us voted for. And so there are these they're called COG. But entities are forming around the world. Like cities have to have plans. And all of a sudden, these are the plans that are rolling out are the plans of the World Economic Forum design.
Yeah.
And, right. And groups of counties or states are getting together and forming these entities. And then federal government money is flowing to these entities. And they are making decisions and spending our tax dollars, but none of them were elected. And so this is another mechanism by which these globalists are trying to take control. And so we have to watch out for them and start moving things back at, you know, like, okay, I don't really, you know, I'm not crazy about the decisions that are being made by legislatures and by Congress. I don't like most of those decisions, but it's better than these World Economic Forum making the decisions.
And well, so, absolutely. Let me say, speaking practically, I understand this is a process of devolution of power. And the closer we get towards the individual, the better. So instead of the international, completely unaccountable, you've never even heard of the person that is supposedly representing you and however many hundreds of millions of other people happen to live in your geographical area at the WHO and the UN, that's ridiculous and nonsensical. And people see that as soon as it's pointed out to them. Okay, let's devolve that down to national sovereignty. But then again, yeah, why does one congressman or one senator have jurisdiction? Okay, let's devolve that. No, it's the state. And then, no, not the state, it's the county. Yes. Not the county, it's the... that's a process. And it's a long process that will take time to really germinate and flower in the public consciousness. But I see the practicality of that.
Yes. And, of course, that's why it was so important what happened in Oklahoma and Louisiana, was the states were saying... The federal government is trying to usurp more and more power, and we're taking it back. The Constitution gave it to us, and we're asserting it for a change. That's what nations need to do in Europe, where the European Union is trying to centralize more and more power and control, even though it's not supposed to, according to its own enabling documents.
And there's a lesson in there for people who are listening to this conversation who are just, I'm just a regular Joe. What am I going to do? I don't have access to these international organizations. You don't need it. Start the campaign locally in your county, in your municipality, whatever it is, whatever local level that you can actually have a voice in, and start the campaign of awareness there. And you could have incredible results from that. You don't know until you try.
You know, one podcaster interviewed me in Oklahoma, and when she heard what was going on, she said, I'm going to make a difference. And that one woman brought this law across the finish line from the beginning to the end.
Awesome. That's it. And that's the way forward, is bringing power back down as locally as possible. And ultimately to the individual, but that's, you know, a long time from now, probably.
Yeah, I should give her a shout out. Her name is Mick Rosato, and she was a nurse. She stopped nursing, just like I stopped doctoring as a result of COVID. She's a podcaster now, and she is dynamite. So shout awesome. Out to Mick.
Nice. Well, thank you to Mick and everyone else out there who is making a difference and doing something about this. That's all I could ever ask, is just do whatever you can, whether it's spreading this information to one other person or whether it's starting a movement that completely changes the world. I think anything that people can do to be energized by this. And yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'm not planning to continue our monthly conversations here on the WHO, but that doesn't mean I'm going to completely turn my attention. I'm going to still continue covering the WHO and the Corbett Report. But yeah, I think we have to connect the dots and connect this into the broader picture.
Yes, we have to go even bigger now. Yeah. And we'll do that. And you and I will keep talking.
Luckily, Door to Freedom is a very catch-all term, so I don't think you have to give up that name.
Yes, thank goodness for that. You know, it was really hard to find a name that nobody else had.
Yeah. And just note, I think .com is taken by something else, right?
Yeah.
So .org.
Yes, .org. Yeah. .org. Thank you. All right. It's been great. Yeah, we've been doing this a year and a half.
Wow. Yeah.
So actually, I think longer. I think we started in November of 2022.
Yeah. A long time ago. And anyway, here we are, and June 2024, and it continues from here. We're not giving up the struggle, but okay, let's acknowledge that what happened in Geneva could have been so much worse, and it is only because of the attention of everyone out there in the crowd, right, who is doing what they can.
People power. It didn't turn into a disaster. Yep. People power. Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. See y'all later.
This and all CHD TV programming is made possible by generous support from viewers like you. Please consider making a contribution today to keep our programming going strong. Thank you.